This is Will Evans, and we're shifting gears. My guest today is David Steinman from Meeker, Colorado. Welcome, David.
Good morning, Will.
Appreciate your connecting up by telephone. You're a retired physician, and I know you're active in the community. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing and what's happening in Meeker.
Well, there has been increased interest and activity in events that happened back when this area was part of the White River Ute Reserve. That reserve was started, as many know, in 1868. And there were some tragic events that happened in 1879. And then near 1880, the Utes were banished from the western slopes of Colorado. So we have been actively involved in attempting to recreate some connections between the White Rivers who had lived here and the community that is here now. And it seems to have been successful. We're very pleased about that.
Tell us what happened last weekend.
Well, we had the first Smoking River powwow. Smoking River is one of the names of the White River. There are other names for it, but it seems to be one that has caught the imagination of both the Utes and the whites up here. We had a two-day powwow. It was intentionally open. There was no fee charged, as we are primarily interested in young children feeling comfortable with their families and exploring and being back in their ancestral homeland.
So this is the first time the Utes have really come in large numbers and participated in activities in the Meeker community?
That may well be the case. There have been notable exceptions to that, with individuals coming here from time to time, but as a group, they have not felt that comfortable in coming and enjoying themselves over here.
I, in fact, heard some people up there say that until now they hadn't felt safe in coming.
Well, they do have their anxieties, and there are many family stories that they felt that they were not welcomed here.
So this was a huge event for them to be able to come and connect up with you.
I think it was a very significant event.
Tell us a little more in detail. How did things start on Friday?
Well, it started with a visit out to a battlefield north of town, some 15 miles, at a location of Milk Creek. Milk Creek is right at the Moffitt County, Rio Blanco County line, and it represented the northernmost boundary of the very large Ute Reserve. That Ute Reserve extended all the way to the New Mexico border. And it was at that point that a pitched battle occurred in September of 1879, and the Ute elders wished to visit that site. The Department of Interior cleared the Utes, saying that by treaty rights, the U.S. soldiers did not have the right to come onto that property. The Utes knew that and decided to defend their property back in 1879.
Well, and as I understand it, there had been an event a short time before at Sand Creek where they felt like their lives were really in danger and they could all be killed based on what the information that had reached them was. So frightened people do violent things.
Well, they apparently had the perception that they were about to be about to lose their rights and be taken into custody, and they felt that they weren't going to be listened to, and they either would go as slaves or they would not allow that to happen.
So that's all history, but what happened on Friday evening and Saturday had very little to do with the past, but was more something about movement in the present.
Yeah, Yes, I would say that was the case. The committee that was responsible for this powwow was really a committee from here in Meeker, and it represented an effort to reach out to the youths and to create a celebration, a ceremony that was Ute, but that was held in a Caucasian site. The town of Meeker supported that and granted the use of Ute Park, which is a city park, town park, and money for the dancing was raised locally. So it was definitely a reaching across cultures effort.
And so this was a sacred ceremony that the Utes came and performed. And tell us a little bit about what the primary activity in that ceremony was.
Well, people that visit powwows know that there have evolved a number of dancing categories for men, women, and boys and girls. And so a full range of those dances were held, competition in each, and a brief explanation as to the origin and to the content and what the judges were looking for. So it was quite a shared and open dance competition there were three sessions, Friday night, Saturday afternoon, and Saturday night, with winners announced and prizes given. At the end of that, the prizes also included the drum contest, so that was well attended also.
So there was a particular dress that the Utes wore. Talk a little bit about the regalia that they adorned themselves with for this ceremony.
The regalia, as I understand it, and I certainly don't speak for the Utes or as an authority, but as I understand the regalia, there is some individual discretion as to how to adorn oneself within the category. Fancy dancing is a different dress than, say, the northern or the southern Ute custom, so that each one of the categories had somewhat different regalia. There were some fantastic colors with long trailers on the end of feathers in some areas, and for the non-initiated, it was a whirling dervish of bright color with splendid coordination of the dancers. In some of the women's categories, the shawl was used, a large shawl with trimmings, so that the dancer frequently appeared as a bird whirling in the air, shifting their look from the right to the left. And these were quite evident. There were dances that looked as though that a sage hen was prancing, sometimes with his chest full and sometimes bent, looking for food on the ground. And these are elements of the dance which I think were quite attractive to the uninitiated.
Oh, they were beautiful and more eagle feathers than I've ever seen on one person in my life. And some of the energy was very high energy dancing.
Right.
Talk to us about what you understand as a physician about the power of movement.
Well, I think that this was a very interesting observation of a culture that has some very effective institutions and elements in it, particularly when we look at the Ute, who was a nomad here, and when we as sedentary individuals are attempting to deal with things like stress and overweight and diabetes, I think we can learn a lot from their reliance on movement and art and ceremony, not only for the effects on the individual body, but on the social bonding that seems to be there with the youths. Again, I don't speak for them, but I really do not see the Utes as going it alone. They are family, they are a tribe, and they certainly demonstrated that in their powwow.
I heard one of the announcers say that the children began dancing and it helped them learn how to live.
I think that's very much a part of their consciousness.
So you realize some things from your medical background about the power of movement and learning.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that in a way that, you know, our listeners can readily understand.
Well, there is a corollary movement among several in our culture, and it might be possible to talk about corollaries that come from this powwow and dancing. There's an activity called PE for Life, Physical Education for Life, that's coming out of experience in the Midwest. And one of the persons that has initiated that lifelong effects of physical education in the school is a associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard named John Rady, R-A-T-E-Y. And Rady points out that all of the research currently being done really relates to the brain as being part of the body in a way that we haven't really fully anticipated. And he is effective in saying that likely there'll be some major consequences in the coming years in our healing and educational arenas. He points to the fact that our body and its genetic code and its network in the brain really relates to the need for energy to find food, and that while we have evolved, our bodies are still in a hunter-gathering mode, and that we definitely have a fight or flight response, and quite often that builds up energy and supplies of some stores that, unless we are much more active than we currently are, it tends to create excessive amounts of body fat, and anxiety is not dissipated in a way that our body has meant to dissipate it.
Well, and I'm also aware that if it doesn't have a healthy release, as in dancing, it can come out in unhealthy behavior.
Well, he certainly points that out in the research that he relates to. His book is Spark, S-P-A-R-K, and its subtitle is The Revolution in the Mind-Body Connection.
And spell his last name for the listeners.
R-A-T-E-Y.
Okay, thank you.
His website is P-E, capital P-E, for the number four, life. And their mission is to provide a better physical education for children at all levels, to assist that student in a personal progress toward fitness and physical activity goals, and to extend beyond the walls of the school gym to form community and business partnerships. They're finding that physical activity awakens the body and builds the components of networking in the brain. The body needs oxygen, of course. It needs glucose. And activity is the element that permits both oxygen and glucose to be widely disseminated. And that, as we all know, as lay people, that there are tremendous numbers of cascading events, and as research has continued, those cascades have involved larger and a wider number of elements than was previously thought to exist. For instance, the cerebellum, which most people would quickly recognize as that part of the body widely recognized in movement, is also very important in thought processes and even emotion. So these are somewhat revolutionary ideas, but Rady really convinces one in his actually he's written a second book about a general guide for understanding these cerebral processes. And so it's an exciting time to see some of the positive elements of Native culture addressing some of our current, if not crises, significant issues.
Well, I certainly had the feeling that a huge healing and learning experience happened, not so much from what was ever said, but just the experience of dancing, watching the beautiful dancing, and then being invited out in the intertribal dances for us to be in the circle, to move, and to be in the presence of that magnificent, powerful drum.
Yes. Well, it's certainly an open process, and I think people who have attended powwows have always understood that it's a universal, a connection to the cosmos that the Native American would encourage anyone who was willing to be a part of that to participate.
And what's the conversation in Meeker like today about what happened this weekend? What kind of feedback are you getting?
I haven't heard negative feedback. I've heard that people enjoyed it. They wondered how it can be financed. They hope that the youths will come back. Those are some of the things that I've been involved in my discussion.
And did you have any conversations with any of the youths before they left? Did you get a feeling for how the experience was for them?
Yes. There were several suggestions on what might be done, when it might be held, to fit into a schedule of powwows in this larger area. I didn't have any negative feedback, so we're feeling pleased about that.
Well, that's wonderful, because it seems like if it continues to grow the way it started, it was the most significant event that's happened in Meeker in over 100 years.
Well, we're pleased that this is going. I think if for the listener that's interested, there are some talking points about this powwow existing on the powwow's website, and that would be Smoking River Powwow, and Google will bring that right up for you, or other browsers. And it's something that has captured our imagination and our commitment, so hopefully there'll be people like yourself who can give us insights as to how this might be prolonged.
Before we close, David, I think our listeners would be interested in what question the new chief ranger at the Rio Blanco White River office asked when he came to town that put in motion all this action.
Well, Glenn Adams is a seasoned Forest Service officer, and he had always been in forest where Native Americans had been employed on trail crews and in other areas. And he related to a number of items. For instance, he talks about Field Service Manual 1500 to develop and maintain effective working relationships with American Indian tribes, taking into account cultural concerns and interests of tribes. And he asked why there were few, if any, Ute employees. And his research found out that the Ute young men did not feel comfortable on their own coming over and applying for positions here.
Yeah, as I understood it, the question kind of boiled down to where are the Utes? And
yeah.
He was supported by a wonderful staff that seemed to almost be dormant and waiting for somebody to ask that question, and they took off running, didn't they?
That's right. The staff of the Forest Service has basically permitted this to work out at the level it had. We were even written up in the Christian Science Monitor in a positive way. That journalist wanted to come back in the following years in hopes that this can be maintained and some of the understandings can be established more firmly. So it was a very positive result from my point of view.
Wonderful. You said that you thought maybe the Utes had a much better social brain. Say more about what you mean.
Well, they just seemed to be more trusting in the family. They definitely are open to group decisions that affect the individuals. They tend to have some built-in learning that would suggest that the individual can rely on others to a fairly high degree, and that, I think, is very positive.
And you think physical activity may help promote that mental clarity?
Well, it provides a sense that if you're in it with others, you are in it with others, so that those who dance enjoy the positive effect that is made both as a group and as being made by those surroundings, and it gives them a better sense of dignity, and they're pleased that the outcome is positive, and they have a sense of accomplishment that's created in that situation.
I saw the Christian Science Monitor article, and can you quote for us what Clifford Duncan was quoted as saying at the end of that article?
Well, they were talking about making an impact, and he said that the impact would not be made with guns, but with drums. And he had a lot of confidence in their connection to nature and their connection to one another. And I felt that was, again, a positive statement about their confidence that they have in their beings.
Yeah. And they've never lost it.
That's right. And that's quite a remarkable accomplishment from my point of view.
It is for a people who've been oppressed and driven from their homeland, which is so critical to their whole being.
That's right.
You also mentioned that you learned from some of your Ute friends, tell us what they said about the name they had for the Indian agent Meeker.
Well, I think that there are a number of accounts that suggest that the Utes were unhappy that he was not a more open individual.
His lack of sense of humor.
That's right. There are several quotes when chiefs were talking among themselves and would refer to Meeker as the old grandmother, as if he scolded them, but he was unable to put it into a let his gut come through a little bit, so to speak.
He couldn't play and laugh with them.
Yeah.
When you talked about the project in Chicago and what they were learning from the power of movement, you said that even some of the academic performance improved.
Well, they were quite impressed with that, and the participants of the programs had extremely good mathematical scores associated with the incorporation of vigorous individual-based physical activity when they introduced it into that school system. That's true.
I think I told you that one of the Ute elders, Loya Aram, is a retired school teacher and has done some work with Brain Gym, which is a movement set of patterns that facilitate learning. The original understanding of that was that it was a way to balance the right and left hemispheres of the brain. We also now know it's a fast way to produce a coherent heart rate variability pattern.
I think those are very important learnings. And I would think that it will soon be more widely accepted in educational circles.
But nothing would have happened if a foundation hadn't been built by Bill Kite and his connection with Clifford Duncan, the spiritual advisor and elder who really held the presence through the whole convening process and the series of dialogues and then presided over the ceremony.
I think Clifford's presence and his long-standing association with Bill Kite were instrumental to this happening.
Well, do you think of anything else you want to share with us that's in your heart from this experience?
Well, I think it has broadened the understanding of some fundamental truths in the consciousness of a large number of people here, and we hope that it can be enforced, and we hope that these positive things can find a corollary activity in our schools, and that this will be a part of the heritage of the people of this area.
Well, I certainly know as a visitor who was privileged to be present for Friday and Saturday, it seemed like a very beautiful seed was planted, and we hope it will grow strong in Meeker and that it could be a model for healing across on a large scale, a lot of wounds that haven't been touched and addressed with our indigenous people. And it could be a model for dealing with the world in a more graceful and beautiful way. Dancing seems to be a way to solve problems that gets beyond words.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your comments and your insight.
Well, thanks so much for talking with us, David.
You're more than welcome.